All right, welcome everybody. This is our 38th class, Parshas Devarim. We start the last book of the Torah, the book of Devarim. And Parshas is named after the book, Devarim, Elo Devarim. These are the things, the statements, the principles that Moshe tells the Jewish people. The book of Devarim basically captured Moshe's final address to the Jewish people in his last 6 years of his life, 6 weeks of his life. Okay? We're going to start with our first video. We have three videos tonight. It's a triple video situation, guys. Sometimes you just need three videos. All right, let's get the...
What?
That's good. Okay. The class is called Bringing Home the Kosher Bacon. Here we go.
I think that's the second video.
The kosher, but no, this is called a crave. This is the first video.
We really wanted, like, we wanted a place, we sort of self-indulgent, because we really wanted a place that we wanted to go eat. Happened to be that it's Korean, Mexican sort of street food things that we were looking to satisfy our appetite with. Besides the fact that, you know, we like eating it, we really believe that the Israelis would embrace it. They travel a lot, they know these flavor profiles, and we were just representing these flavor profiles and quality that was new to the market. What we're building here is kind of unique to the Shuk, but is also meant to be universal. It's funky, there's a vibe, it's cool, it's pretentious. There are no white tablecloths and no dividing line between guests and the folks who are serving or preparing. It's heartening to me that the best cheeseburger in Israel, I think anywhere, but the best cheeseburger anywhere is kosher.
Our burgers are all in the form of sliders, which are smaller burgers. We have a sous vide egg that we finish on the plancha. And our bacon is made from lamb bacon, something signature that we do here. Our best mayo here is usually sesame mayo. And then we do offer a vegan cheese. We started making our own vegan cheese, really natural, vegetable-based cheese. It basically fills a void of, like I wasn't kosher for a long, you know, my growing up. And it fills a void that, like, I was sort of missing what I wanted to go eat. So this burger really kind of hits that spot. The creaminess of the egg and the cheese and the smokiness of the bacon with a really good ground beef that's cooked to order. It's amazing.
All right.
Did they say lamb? Lamb bacon?
Lamb bacon.
I never even heard of it.
Yeah, they take the lamb, they smoke, they slice it up in that classic way, and they smoke it. And then they, as you saw, they prepared it. We're going to the Shuk, by the way, Scott, so you can actually go to that restaurant.
I gotta stop there. I gotta get
stop at getting the kosher cheeseburger with kosher cheap bacon cheeseburger.
I'm getting one.
That's it. All right. So I start off with some questions here. So you see the sheet, guys?
Yes.
Okay, yes.
All right. Question number one. How do you think a little kosher kid feels at a rest stop on the interstate watching everybody eating burgers and pizza while he munches on a somewhat moist PB&J sandwich from the back seat? How does he feel?
Left out, maybe?
Yes. What else?
FOMO. What? Fear of missing out.
He's not fear of missing out. He feels he's missing out. He's not.
He's afraid. It's like actual jealousy. It's like he's right. There.
He's full on jealous.
He's missing out.
He is actually feels he's missing out. It's not the fearing. He's actually is missing out. What else does he feel? Not that
different.
He can't have pizza or burgers like everybody else is having. What
he
else?
He feels different.
Right. He feels different. He feels like an outsider. And now there's different good and there's different weird. he's feeling different weird as he eats his little sandwich, you know, all wrapped up in the tin foil that mom made. All right. Now, how do you think the parents feel as they tell the kids for the millionth time why they can't have the food everyone else is enjoying at the rest stop? How do the parents feel?
Frustrated, like they're depriving their kid of something that they want, maybe something that they want also.
I think that's on point. Right. They have to now explain to the kid why they – so part of a natural feeling toward – a natural feeling of a parent has toward children is you want your kid to be happy. You don't necessarily want to initially want to to deprive your child unnecessarily. You want the and by extension, a part of you wants the kid's love and appreciation. So if you're saying you can't have that ice cream, you can't have those donuts, you can't have that burger, you can't have that pizza, you have to eat the food that was, you know, in your bag. Okay. So it's rough. It's rough. Okay. Now obviously kids get used to it. But now here we get to question number 3. How important to this kid's Israel experience is the easy access and wide variety of kosher food? What do you guys say?
It depends. Assuming that, you're trying to teach your kid that there is a place for kosher food, then it's important because this is the place where kosher food is.
What about the parents teaching? How does a kid feel, you know, when kids go to Israel for the first time? And, you know, and this is true for MGers as well. What do they love to do? What kind of places do they love to go to, specifically in Israel?
The kosher McDonald's.
Boom! Shayna, on point. Now, there are many restaurants which are way better than, first of all, McDonald's is not, it's not good for you. And the fact that they have a kosher McDonald's in Israel, I mean, whatever, it's the same bad food without, we'll have vegan cheese to make the cheeseburger.
You get to tell people, like, I went to a kosher McDonald's.
Right. Now, so what seems, so from a culinary standpoint, you could do much better. Why is that like a big deal? And not only that, there's also Pizza Hut and Kentucky Fried Chicken, and all the major chains have kosher examples, you know, franchises in Israel.
There aren't ones like, I know like there's a kosher like Dunkin' Donuts near MGE. There's a kosher Dunkin' Donuts at YU. Are there kosher fast food places there too?
In Israel, yes.
No, not Israel. At the Yeshiva University,
they have the two pizza stores. They have a Chinese place. They have
not like Burger King, McDonald's.
No.
Okay.
That you only get in Israel.
Yeah, that's what it's like, the novelty of it.
But what is the novelty of it?
The novelty is that they want to feel like every other kid now. They're able to. They don't have to feel deprived.
Exactly. It's not
they get their happy meal and their toy and all that. Yeah.
Exactly. It's not that the 40-cent toy and the happy meal and the French fries and Big Mac is better than the food they'll get at a nicer restaurant. But it's the fact that they can finally be like everybody else. That's a big set. It's more important, more satisfying psychologically than the actual food enjoyment, which is going to be, you know, mediocre fast food, you know, fast food stuff. Now, how attractive would the slogan of the Crave restaurant be to this kosher kid, which is, at Crave, it's a kosher food you always wanted, but you can never have. How on point would that be for the kid?
I think that would be really exciting.
Yes. And not only that, they're actually not doing it in a regular fast food way. They're doing it what you call nowadays, and you know, in America, via upscale cuisine. But you know, it's like you call upscale bar food cuisine. You know what I'm saying? Like the food's really good, but the ambiance is very, you know, there's not white tablecloth. You know, there are servers who are also dishing out beer. You know what I'm saying? So it's high quality food, but in a bar environment. You know, they're sous-viding the egg. You know, that's a fancy word. They're putting in a special bag and they're boiling it to the right temperature. Sous-vide, whatever, for those foodies out there. Anyways, and you're having the specially cured lamb bacon then fried up and put on your, you know, triple slider, you know, well, all that kind of thing. Now, of course, do you think the little kid and every kosher adult also enjoys the easy access to food in Israel?
It's like a sense, I was there with observant family, and it was like a sense of relief to them. Like, they didn't have to check everything. You know, they knew what was kosher, and it was like such a, they were so happy. It was like right. Such a relief.
It's a relief that you can basically, you don't have to like pack up the food for lunch and dinner. You're going to go out. You know that you're going to go to some place and there'll be a place you can buy lunch and you can buy dinner. And there'll be kosher options which have reliable, you know, supervision because it's Israel. And the market for kosher food is immense. So, you know, people say, like, go to Israel, like, nearly everything's kosher. It's not true, but it's largely true. There are non-kosher restaurants in both Jerusalem and more so in Tel Aviv. But there are plenty of kosher, you know, kosher places. So that's really, people love that. That. You know, especially if you grew up observant, it's a big deal to be able to be like everybody else. Wherever you want to go, there's food. All right. Now, interesting, we'll start off with a little bit of a Gemara here. Let's have Mendel read this first Gemara from, this is from Chulin. I'm going to write this down. Chulin.
Where is it from? Chulin?
Yeah.
Okay. Chulin. Is that Reish Tes?
That's 109B. So it'd be Kuf Tet.
Kuf Tes, okay. So 109B. Yalta once said to Rav Nachman, observe, for everything that the divine law has forbidden us, it has permitted us an equivalent. It has forbidden us blood, but it has permitted us liver. It has forbidden us the fat of cattle, but has permitted us the fat. It has forbidden us the fat of cattle, but it has permitted us the fat of wild beasts. It has forbidden us swine's flesh, but it has permitted us the brain of the shibuta. I wish to eat flesh in milk. Where is its equivalent? Thereupon, Rav Nachman said to the butchers, give her roasted udders.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me break this out here. I apologize to Suzanne as a vegan. This is a little rough, but we're just learning here. Okay, so Yalta...
rough to everyone.
Right, okay, so Yalta said, she says that Hashem is... he's given us whatever the Torah offered. There is a other food that really is kosher. So there's a part of the animal, the fat, we call the chalev, which is forbidden in, you know, regular cows, sheep, and goats. But wild animals such as deer would not be prohibited. Now here's interesting. They already had back in the Talmud identified an equivalent for pork, the brain of the shibuta. Okay, so what is the shibuta? We don't really know what the shibuta is in our modern day, but it's not really important. The bottom line is, and then she says, I want to have milk and meat. So this is actually in a whole Talmudic discussion about, you know, the udder, obviously the cow's udder has milk in it. So what's your response? Can you that, you know, so is that if I roast it, is that milk and meat? So, you know, the basic halacha is you cut it open and you just have to squeeze out the milk. If there's some residual milk, since it did not come out of the animal, it's considered part of the animal and not technically milk and meat. So So then you can roast it on open flame. But she's technically having, essentially, a cheeseburger. You know, it's a halakhic loophole.
Wow.
Okay? So the point of the matter is that the Torah does not, it's not that there's a, the key point, this tells you a number of ideas. Number one is that kosher food, non-kosher food is not what they call a taboo. Right? It's not like it's something intrinsically poisonous. The Torah is giving us a system of discipline, of not being completely indulgent, and the Torah allows. But if you can work around that, fine. Now, we'll get to the next Talmudic thing of the night. All right, let's have Shmuel. Read from the Jerusalem Talmud.
Jerusalem Talmud, Kedushin 4:12. Rav Sivkaya, the priest, said in the name of Rav, a person will ultimately be called to judgment for everything which his eyes saw and which he did not taste. Rav Lazar was concerned because of this teaching. He saved his pennies and would purchase and eat from every fruit once a year.
All right, so apparently this statement, the name of the Rav, that basically to be basically the doctrine of asceticism. What is asceticism? That I'm going to basically fundamentally deprive myself from the enjoyments of this world. So this Gemara, at least in isolation, is saying that a person basically it observes a doctrine of asceticism and not having, say, I'm not going to have this enjoyment, I'm not going to have that enjoyment, I'm not going to have this enjoyment. He's that's wrong. God gave you a world with different enjoyments. You should enjoy it. Now, obviously, there's a time and place for that. Okay. Now, so we see here, so putting these all together, so to have a restaurant called Crave, which is producing essentially these are chefs that worked out the best duplication of a bacon cheeseburger possible within the coastal framework is, you know, part of that idea. Do you think it's a good thing that they should have that? Is there a positive, negative? What do you say?
I certainly don't think it's a negative thing.
No, you said just a positive. In other words, you're helping people who grew up, let's say, not observant, and they have that yearning for that delicious bacon cheeseburger experience. These chefs worked out a way to create a kosher equivalent.
Yeah, without using roasted cow udders, which is nice.
You're not going for the roasted cow udders.
I'm not going to divulge what I have or have not eaten.
Right.
But it's not, I assure you, it's
by
not.
Way, in Israel, you can buy, there are a lot of organ stuff in different parts of the animal that you can't get in America, like it's not offered, but some of the more Sephardic places will get you some. I'm not going to, I have a sensitivity to Suzanne, I'm not going to mention the parts, because I think she will not enjoy that. Right, we're going to move on. We're moving on. We are moving on. All right, we get to our next video. Okay, let's go to our next video. We're building our case here, guys. We're building our case, as we like to do. Okay, here we go. What happened here? What happened here? Hold on. This is a movie, Click. Has anybody seen the movie Click with Adam Sandler? All right, whatever. We'll explain it when.
I've seen it. It's okay.
It's not it's Adam Sandler. You know, it's
okay. He's always funny.
Exactly. Here we go.
Maybe they'll help you finish quicker.
Alright, you want me to look at it? Ceilings 200. high, hallways too narrow. Stairway placement makes no sense at all. What's his room made of?
Pizza.
Well, it's stupid. Next, what's yours made of?
Paper.
Oh, don't be a baby.
Have you lost your mind? He's 7 years old. If he wants a playroom made of pizza, then why not?
Maybe he's got to grow up sometime and get off Fantasy Island. Hey, pizza boy. Life ain't about being creative. It's about playing it safe. Making your boss a lot of money and hoping one day he might throw you a stinking ball. All right?
Yes, sir.
All right, anyways. So in this movie, all right, so what did Adam Sandler dislike about his children's architectural plan?
That they were using their imagination in unrealistic terms?
Right, he started to assess it like he's an architect in the movie, playing an architect in the movie. So he's assessing it based upon its architectural validity. And, he apparently didn't like the pizza room or whatever. And was that a normal, obviously his wife chastised him for why are you going crazy with your kids? What was the reason? Why was he doing that?
Because he was upset he didn't make partner.
Right. Since he did not make partner,
he was in a bad mood.
And he's at home doing more work. He's trying to work harder. He's on the rat race. He's on the hamster wheel over there, hoping that he's going to impress his boss and he'll be able to be rewarded for his work. And therefore, he's like, all of the joy of life has been completely sucked out of him. And he's obsessed about making partner. And that's everything. And to the extent is, even the kid, why does he want to make partner?
So he can be his boss, kind of, make a whole bunch of money and then have somebody else work,
Right. So why? But what,
90 hours a week.
Right. So what's the joy that he's looking for?
He's looking for financial joy.
To make a lot of money to do what?
The sense of accomplishment.
What else?
To be rich.
To be rich. And to be able to enjoy all of life's goods, good things. What cost is he spending?
He's the cost of his family.
Right, but meanwhile, that which is really an instrumentality to have a build a wonderful family is causing him to destroy his family by yelling at everybody, being critical with everybody,
He doesn't get to enjoy those silly moments when your kid builds a pizza room.
Exactly. Or a pickle room.
Yeah.
So, exactly. So the bottom line is that on one hand, let's say enjoying the cheeseburger, enjoying all different things, as Mark pointed out, enjoying various, enjoyments of all of life is a good thing, but that's not the only thing. If the pursuit of pleasure basically creates a circumstance where you're running after the money to buy all these things to the extent that you're basically crushing your family, then you've not accomplished anything. So I wanted to add a little personal experience. So this past weekend, I went up to Hunter, New York, where Rabbi Yoni Sachs lives now. He just living there a couple months. And I'm working on the curriculum for the coming year and the senior fellowship, the fellowship, whatever. We went to a coffee shop. Now this coffee shop has delicious coffee. They make a wide variety of fresh donuts. They have a special automated donut maker, which is amazing to watch. And they have all kinds of donuts. So we're sitting there, I'm sitting on the couch there, the coffee. It's one of the places you get a mug and then you can as much coffee as you can drink without exploding. No problem. One price. And then other kind of places. Very cool. Anyways, so the people next to us were schmoozing and they have a variety of different kind of donuts. And the woman was looking at me, looking at her donuts, you know, and the guys, you know, I was looking a little apparently a little too longingly at their fresh donuts they just got from the donut maker with a bunch of delicious, of course, donut was not enough. They had to put on some liquid, you know, that the sugar that dries on it. What do you call it? The glaze. They glazed the donut because the donut apparently was not cloyingly sweet enough. They had to add the, and they're eating the donuts, and they look at me and say, do you want some? I said, no, I'm good. You know, so, but that's that part of one of the benefits of, if you're not keeping kosher, there is no idea of the word no. You do not deprive yourself of anything, because if I was not kosher observant, I would be having those donuts. Because that cup, I said to the ones, you know, this cup of coffee, it's a little lonely. It's saying he needs a donut to join it, but it's not going to, you know. So I didn't want to go into the whole kosher thing. So I said, you know, I'm on a diet, which is also true. I don't want to have to go a whole explanation. I have to bring out a chart, hand out sheets, start giving a class. They don't want to listen to my class. Anyways, but that's the key thing, is that part of the benefit of the kosher laws is that basically, yes, you should enjoy yourself, but not as the good of life, and to have clear boundaries is one of the benefits of the kosher system. Okay, now we get to, with this introduction, we get to the Parsha. So this Parsha has three chapters, and basically Moshe is giving some of the highlights and what's called the lowlights of the Jewish people. One of them being, of course, the episode of the spies, which has an account here in this Parsha, as well back in the last book of Bamidbar and Bashalah. Now, one of the more advanced Chumash activities is to compare and contrast the narrative between the events in the first books, let's say in Shemot and Bamidbar, versus the Moshe's retelling of it in Devarim. They're not exactly the same. And so you see what Moshe decides to emphasize and what he decides to omit. Okay? So let's take a look at this week's Parsha. All right, so whoever. All right, Suzanne, read out from the Parsha this week.
I don't.
Read from here. Moshe reiterates. Okay.
Why don't I see the sheet? Is it just me?
You know why? Because I did not share it.
Okay.
That's a good reason.
Moshe reiterates the deal of giving the Transjordan land to Reuven and Gad and half of Shevet Menashe. What does Moshe leave out in this recap?
Okay, so I'm going to read the short recap, and you'll tell me what he left. This is the test. You guys remember or aware? And if not, I'll tell you.
Okay, Devarim 3:16, to the Reubenites and Gadites, I gave the territory between the Gilead and the Arnon Gorge.
So very simply, it's basically the land starting from the Golan Heights going into Jordan, in that northern area. Okay, you should know. All right, go on.
At that time, I gave you instructions saying, God your Lord has given you this land as a heritage. Let every able-bodied man among you go forth ahead of your fellow Israelites as a special force. I know that you have much livestock. Your wives, children, and livestock can remain in the cities I have given you until God gives your brethren the same haven that he has given you. When they occupy the land that God your Lord is giving them across the Jordan, each man will be able to return to his inheritance that I have given you.
Okay, so my advanced Parsha question is, what is Moshe sort of leaving out in this recap or in this review of that you guys, you had, you know, they conquered that part of the land, and Moshe gives it to them, and he's saying that you're going to, but before you take possession of that, you're going to go and lead the charge to help the other 9.5 tribes capture the land of Canaan. What does Moshe, interestingly enough, leave out? And this account is actually from last week's parsha of Matot.
Is it that they asked for the land, that their livestock, that or it was enough for their livestock to eat, so they said, let us stay here and have this land instead of crossing into Israel?
Exactly. They did not offer, they just said, let's stay here, and we're not, and they didn't mention nothing about helping join the war, which of course Moshe, as we're going to read, was, shall we say, unhappy about. Okay, they just said, they pulled up, they had a beautiful land which was lush, and they had a lot of cattle. They said, perfect, we don't need to go into the land of Israel, we got cattle place here, we're done, boom, we'll set up shop here. So Moshe, in the recap, omits, let's have a little recap action. Let's have Mendel read it out, last week's parsha, about how it really went down. Yeah, Moshe.
Is that the third link to your triple header there? Do we need?
Yeah, we're going to go back to it. I'm going to bring it back in.
Okay. Bamidbar chapter 32, the petition of Reuven and Gad. The descendants of Reuven and Gad had an extremely large number of animals. Areas were good for livestock. The Gilead and Yaazer, and they saw that the descendants of Gad and Reuven therefore came and presented the following petition to Yaazer.
No, this came out a little bit messed up. Hold one second. All right.
Sure.
Hold on. Bear with me one second. It always does this. I'm going to notice that's a problem. Hold on one second.
Is it a problem with copy paste, or is it a problem with editing?
Copy paste. One second. 32. One second. We're going to go to the other slap share. Apologize for that. But 32. Doing everything very quickly these days. Okay, so this is in its original where I got the copy paste. Again.
From 32:1, or not?
Okay, well, I'm going to make it big. All right, go ahead.
The descendants of Reuven and Gad had an extremely large number of animals, and they saw that Yaazer and Gilead areas were good for livestock.
Good.
The descendants of Gad and Reuven therefore came and presented the following petition to Moshe, Eliezer the priest, and the community princes. Ataroth, Divon, Yaazer, Nimra, Cheshbon, Elaleh, Sevam, Nebo, and Baom. In the land that God struck down before the Israelite community is livestock land, and what we have is livestock. Moshe objects to the petition. They said, if you would grant us a favor, let this land be given to us as our permanent property. Do not bring us across the Jordan.
Okay, so stop right there. So hold on. So as Shana said, they said, hey, this land is perfect for us. We got a lot of cattle. This is great cattle land. We're going to give up our portion of the land of Israel. We'll just stay here. That was her offer. Let's see how that goes down to Moshe. Yeah.
Moshe said to the descendants of Gad and Reuven, why should your brothers go out and fight while you stay here? Why are you
Stop right there. Well, he says with a little bit more, you can hear, why should your brothers go out and fight while you stay here? In other words, you know, basically you're pulling up. You're going to be checking out. And meanwhile, your fellow brothers got to go out and fight the Canaan. Okay? Go on, he's not done.
Why are you trying to discourage the Israelites from crossing over to the land that God has given them? This is the same thing your fathers did when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. They went as far as Cluster Valley to see the land, and then they discouraged the Israelites from coming to the land that God gave them. God displayed his anger that day and swore, none of the men over 20 years old who left Egypt will see the land that I swore to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, since they did not follow me wholeheartedly. The only exceptions shall be Kalev, the son of Yefunah, the Kenizzite, and Yehoshua, son of Nun, because they followed God wholeheartedly. God displayed anger against Israel, and he made them wander 40 years in the desert, until the generation that had done evil in God's eyes had died. Now you are trying to take your father's places as a band of sinners, and bring yet more of God's wrath against Israel. A pledge of aid by Reuben and Gad. You will dissuade them from following him, and he will once again leave us in the desert. Then you will have destroyed this nation completely.
I'll stop right there. What really... So Moshe unloads on them. He completely unloads on them. What basically is his criticism of their request?
That they're acting just like the spies did.
So what's that? What's the connection between them and the spies? Not.
That they're saying what we have is good enough.
Well, the spies can say that. What do the spies say?
That the land is not quite suitable for everyone to go there.
They said we can't go there. We can't. In other words, the land is beautiful, but we can't. We can't knock out the. We can't knock out the Canaanites. We're going to get killed. We can't go. So, but he said basically. So they effectively convinced everybody that the invasion of the land of Canaan is impossible. So to hear, how are they going to do that? How are they going to do that as well?
Well, Reuven and Gad don't seem to be saying that. They just seem to be looking at things not, I guess, selfishly would be the best term. I mean, they're looking at the land that they're at now in the moment and saying, this is good enough. We don't need to go over there. We don't need to see what's over there. We have this. Let's set up our stakes over here and, you know, whatever. Shalom al Yisrael.
And Shalom al Yisrael, as a good man once said. What is Moshe informing them? But by them not joining the rest of the tribe, when 2.5 out of the 12 tribes are not going to join the fight, that effectively, that's not a small amount of the fighting force. You're de facto killing the morale that basically they're not going to want to go in without you guys. And the net result is that you're going to basically kill the second chance after the 40 years to effectively enter the land. You're going to cause a tremendous widespread sense of being dispirited, and then God's going to be angry at us, and we're going to be stuck outside again. So he unleashes, and he's making a good point. All right, so then it ain't over. We have a round two going on here. All right, Shmuel, read it out. Verse 16.
The Reubenites and Gadites approached Moshe and said, "We will build enclosures for our sheep here and cities for our children. But we will then arm ourselves and go as an advance guard before the other Israelites, fighting until we have brought them to their homeland. Because of the area's inhabitants, our children will remain in fortified cities. But we ourselves will not return home until every Israelite has taken possession of his hereditary property. We, however, will not take possession with them on the far side of the Jordan, since our inheritance shall come to us on the Jordan's eastern bank."
Okay, go on.
Moses conditions conquests. Moses said to them, "If you do that and go forth as a special force ahead of your brothers, your petition will be granted. Your entire special force must cross the Jordan before God and fight until he has driven his enemies before him. When the land is then conquered before God, you may return home and you will be free of any obligation before God and Israel. This land will then be yours as your permanent property before God. But if you do not do that, you will have sinned to God, and you must realize that your sin will be your undoing. Now build yourself cities for your children and folds for your sheep, but keep your promise." The descendants of Gad and Reuben said to Moshe, "We will do as you've ordered."
Okay, good. Now, there's a subtle point there. I don't know. Does anybody know there's a subtle point in how they – so just to review, what did God, the tribe of God and the tribe of and Reuven come back to Moshe with?
Their offer was, we'll go ahead of everyone else and be the tip of the spear, and we won't quit until everyone is settled and the land is safe.
Exactly. So all right, and does Moshe accept that deal?
It appears so, yeah.
He says yes, and by doing so, and only through that do they will actually gain possession of this land. Now, Rashi brings up a very interesting point here. Let's check out the Rashi here. Very interesting. All right, let's have Scott read it out.
One second. Rashi, we will build for our cattle here. They paid more regard to their property than to their sons and daughters because they mentioned their cattle before their children.
In other words, stop right there. In other words, they say, oh, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to make corrals for our sheep and cities for our kids. And Moshe said, Moshe, when Moshe agreed, expressed the deal as differently. No, you're going to set up fortified cities for your kids and corrals for your animals. So go on. Moshe, this is the Rashi. Go on.
Moses said to them, not so. Make the chief thing the chief thing. And what is subordinate. First build cities for your little ones and afterwards enclosures for your flocks.
Okay. So So the fact that Moshe changes, the Midrash says, their focus was on what? What was their chief focus?
On their livelihood, on their livestock, which they can make money off of.
Exactly. And what about their kids?
This is secondary. Okay. They'll be fine.
They will be fine. Exactly. So the focus is on the money, and then the kids come in number two. Okay, so, and Moshe criticized them by...
Is that not correct?
Apparently not. Apparently Moshe was not good. Moshe apparently was not down with that. Now, how does that happen? Now...
They had their priorities out of whack.
Now, you could, if we just end the class here, we could just say simply, the people of the tribe of God and Reuven, these guys are selfish, narcissistic people who only care about their wealth, even at the exclusion of their kids, right? That's one way of reading it. Now, I'm going to share a little video action to give you another way to provide, and my discussing with Rabbi Sachs is more another way to gain a little appreciation for our people of understanding where you guys are coming from. Okay, so this is a little video.
Let's
Nice. All right. I don't know why it's honking out here. Anyways, but what was this? Was a music video in celebration of the Israel's 70th anniversary since the establishment of the State of Israel, and the world movement of B'nai Akiva, which is a religious Zionist movement. What they did was to celebrate that they had 70 representatives from 70 different chapters of B'nai Akiva from all over the world. Okay. In the video, and particularly the song, what sentiment comes through clearly? Or so I think so.
None really. It was difficult to see.
What are they trying to convey?
That Israel is home.
Israel is home. And you can, and don't check, there's no need to check anyplace else out. You just go, everything's going to work out, it's going to be fine. Now, with that mentality, let's step into the shoes of the tribe of Reuven and Gad. How long have you been waiting for to get into the land of Canaan?
40 years.
Yeah, over 40 years.
When was the land of Canaan promised to the Jewish people?
The time of Abraham.
The time of Abraham. How many years ago was that from the whole thing?
About 400.
400 years. So they've basically been waiting for 400 years to get into the land. And it's not that they're like, so therefore the level of impatience and just desire to get the situation over with and to set up and to live life fully is very great. So I'm just giving you up. It's not that these guys are just a bunch of hedonistic, self-absorbed narcissists. You know what I'm saying? No, it's a normal thing. They've been running. They've been schlepping in the desert. They before that, they and their ancestors have been in the land of Egypt for 210 years. Before that, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov have been reiterating the promise they're going to get in there. So they're sort of exhausted with the. And then now they actually have a land which is adjoining the land of Israel, which will now become Greater Israel. So they want to enjoy that. But what's the problem? So why are they not right? Why are they not right to be frustrated?
Who's frustrated? Moshe?
No, the God and the tribe of God and Reuven. They have a lot of cattle. They conquer this land. It is beautiful. Let them enjoy life.
But that's not what was promised to them.
Yeah, but so basically what they asked is that make this land an extension of the land of Israel. And Moshe said okay with that. It's not like they're going to be living outside the land of Israel. The land of Israel now has grown with their successful invasion of the Golan Heights area, northern Jordan area. The land of the Bashan and, you know, King Og. You know what I'm saying? So what's wrong with their mentality? What mistakes are they fundamentally making?
It doesn't seem like they're actually interested in what they've been given. It seems like they're wanting something else.
Well, Moshe's not criticizing them. Why he didn't say to them, why do you guys want to live outside the land of Israel, the promised land? Why are you going to live next door to that? He's not criticizing them for that. He's criticizing them for basically because you want to settle the land, you don't want to help out your brother by doing the heavy lifting of the invasion. You know, he's not criticizing for why don't you extend out the land of Israel to where their current location is. You know what I'm saying? He's got no problem with that. He's got problems with the fact that they're so absorbed, either A, they're going to create a tremendous panic by basically stepping out of the responsibility of the invasion, A, and B, the subtle criticism about you're so absorbed about your money, you're not taking proper care about your kids. So fundamentally, this is really the fundamental challenge I think all of us feel to varying degrees. We right now live in we are living in a extremely wealthy time. Even if you're not upper class, even if you're living as a middle class person, you have tremendous luxuries. You know what I mean? You know, you want coffee, you can have 70 kinds of coffee. You want pizza, there's 1,000 kinds of pizza. You want cookies, you go into a supermarket, there's an aisle which is about 300 feet long from floor to ceiling with cookie varieties. You're constantly being offered, you know, all kinds of enjoyments. Now, we saw earlier, the Talmud says, we don't say, oh, these are enjoyments, you should enjoy yourself, you should be an ascetic, you should become like a monk and not enjoy your life. No. You can enjoy your life, but it should not cloud what? That which is truly important. Like Adam Sandler, he was so focused on making the money, he started to ignore his family. He's starting to be harsh with his kids. In other words, in his quest for the dream of money, he starts to lose perspective about where its relative value is. Similarly, we have by the two tribes, it's good that they want to, if they would have come to Moshe and says, Moshe, we're going to go and do the invasion. But we want to know if this land that we just conquered, could that be included into larger Israel? We will, of course, build cities for the kids and wives and kids to be taken care of, and as well as corrals for the animals. But we're going to go in first. Would that be okay? What would Moshe have said if they made that petition? What do you think Moshe would have said? Would he would have been okay with that?
He would have been much happier that they would have had their priorities a little bit more straight.
Being that he agreed to it at the end means that he would have been happy with it. He says, look, you're concerned about Jewish unity. You're concerned that the Jewish people should get a land. You're concerned that you should not throw off the communal responsibility upon others. You're concerned about your kids, that they're going to be properly taken care of. And last of all, you're concerned about your money. In other words, these things are important, but the art of life is to ensure that the prioritization remains good. And it's very hard to get sucked in. Let's go back to our first video, which was the restaurant Crave that's making the world class bacon, kosher bacon cheeseburgers. Okay. Now, if a person like Scott says, you know, that seems cool, when I'm in Israel in like 2 weeks from now, and we're going to go to the Shuk in about 2 weeks from this coming Friday, I'd like to go try that out. There's nothing wrong with that, because he's not making that the good of life. He's not saying the whole purpose of my life is to perfect and only enjoy the most awesome food experience. If a person said that or was that, their priorities are messed up. And then they're going to start doing things. They're going to, in order to get the ultimate food experience, they're going to end up doing things. In other words, they'll need a lot more money. So they might have to work a lot harder. They will then spend less time with their family. They'll spend less time with their friends. They'll certainly spend less time learning Torah. They'll spend less time working and helping the community. So basically, for the quest of the ultimate food and the cost therein, they then de facto cause an entire chain of a reprioritization of the values. So the bottom line is, to enjoy life is a good thing, a healthy thing, provided it puts into the right, the pri- the right order of priorities. And that was the challenge that the tribe of Gad and Reuben had. And the truth is, we, the Jewish people, as we are on the doorstep of Tisha B'Av, basically Tisha B'Av could be reduced very simply, is a Jewish report card. And if we live in an unredeemed world where the temple is not rebuilt, that means fundamentally we as the Jewish people do not have our priorities correct. We are not moving, we're not where we need to be. That's what Tisha B'Av fundamentally is. And the measure is that God has withdrawn his providence from us, as, and therefore a measure of protection is the Jews are exposed to all kinds of terrible things. And that's why we talk about not just the destruction of the two temples, but all the tragedies that happened from the temple time all the way through the Holocaust and beyond. It's time to reflect upon the fact that we, as Jewish people, have not enjoyed God's protective cover through all the ages. We do have the promise that the Jewish people will not be destroyed in its entirety, but does not mean that the Jewish people can suffer tremendous calamities, which we have. But the purpose is not to dwell on the negative, as to be a catalyst for further growth. And that growth is about what are our priorities as a person, as a family, as a community, and as a nation. And that's kind of the thinking that we have to have on Tisha B'Av. Really to take stock. How do we get here? What are our challenges? Where are our priorities? Where are they off? And I would tell you something, is that this is my observation, take it or leave it, that we as American Jews struggle from the curse of wealth. Not that wealth is bad. We say not the opposite. It's a blessing to have wealth. But the distracting nature of just enjoying all life's, you know, enjoyments, it can become just overwhelmingly distracting. I mean, I'll just give you, in other words, like, you know, you'll have people will complain about, like, you know, I'm a little bit of I enjoy coffee. So, you know, you have different ranking of coffee. The lowest level of coffee is instant coffee. Within that, there are different rankings. And then moving up, there is free office coffee, okay? You know, when it's 3 o'clock and you're driving, you know, you're starting to sag, you get the free office Keurig coffee. You know what I mean? The problem with that, it's too little coffee, too much water. It's a little bit weak. Then you move on to the next level of coffee is gas station coffee, okay? You're tired, you pull in, you fill up the tank. Not good coffee. Then you move up to the Dunkin' Donuts /Starbucks. You know, some people like a little darker, you know, the different varieties. And then you go there, and then you start to have like an encyclopedia of choices. Half calf, decaf, macchiato, you know, soy milk, almond milk, hemp milk, stevia, sugar, snap, sweet and low, a Splenda. You know, sweet syrup, you know, there's like the choice are, and if a guy does not get the exact amount of, have you ever been at the coffee shop where a person's like upset at that the server did not get the complex coffee order correct? Is this too? Have you seen that before? Shmuel, have you seen that?
No.
Is that because the baristas are getting it right all the time? They might. They try desperately to get
it
off.
The connection was bad. I didn't hear anything you said.
I'm saying, have you seen people that get upset when their coffee order is not exactly perfect?
Only on
what?
Only on TV.
Only. It actually happens in real life. You know what I mean? So it's a good metaphor of like we have this tremendous abundance. But if it's a little bit not perfect, we go crazy. You know what I'm saying? And therefore, that the various pleasures that we have access to, we take for granted, and that becomes the totally all-consuming distraction of our lives. And therefore, big picture issues like What is the purpose of my life? What is the meaning of life? What should I be doing? What are my goals? How am I, you know, how am I becoming a more expansive, sensitive person? These types of conversations are get pushed out because the quest is for that little better food and that little better drink. You know what I'm saying? And it becomes, so on one hand, we should not dismiss it, but we have to keep in the right priorities. And that's something that we as American Jews, which we're in a historical moment, we're not really experiencing any anti-Semitism in America, at least. I mean, has anybody here experienced any anti-Semitism of note in the last 6 months? No. And you can pretty much do anything, go anywhere, buy anything, and nobody's going to say anything. And you'll be fully welcomed. So that's a good thing because we're allowed to, you know, the fact is that we're allowed to have this class. But in the 1970s and 80s, if this was in Russia, we would be all arrested under the Soviet regime. So it's a tremendous blessing that we have America where we can learn Torah and live a Jewish life. And we're not persecuted because of that. It's a tremendous blessing. But that freedom is a very tricky thing. You know what I mean? Like it's, first of all, 95% of American Jews who are not observant have not been educated sufficiently to really value the Jews. I mean, fundamentally, they just leave it behind. They're just Jewish. And that's it. And as such, they're intermarrying and assimilating out. So the challenge of wealth and the challenge of freedom and the challenge of loving embrace of America is it's not so simple. And for most American Jews, it's not really worked out for them, ultimately. So that really some of the thoughts to have as we move on to Tisha B'Av, the Saturday night to Sunday. If you guys are in the MG quadrant, of course, we have a fantastic program both on Saturday night and Sunday. So, but that's really some of the, and that's some of the things that you see that the tribe of Reuven and Gad, they were so excited about having the land. They forgot about helping out their brothers. They forgot about taking care of their kids. They focused all about what? We can make a lot of money. And that's, by extension, something that all of us in our community sort of becomes absorbed with, and therefore the priorities start to suffer. And then really that's something to consider and reflect upon as we go into Tisha B'Av and reflect upon the, you know, the calamities of our past and understand how we got there and how we can have a hopeful future. For those, I will see Scott tomorrow. Everybody else is in different states. No, Suzanne's in New York, but I'll see you, Scott, tomorrow. And I want to wish Shana a Nesiyah Tova to Israel. And everybody else, I will see you next Tuesday night.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Have a good trip, Shana.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. Have a nice trip.
Thank you.